At Nutrafol, we don't just help your hair, we help your body grow it. Because it's never just about your hair. It can be your job, or your deodorant, or your lunch, or just normal life. That's why our whole body approach targets the key root causes of hair thinning. Discover your root causes and why we're the number one dermatologist recommended hair growth supplement brand at Nutrafol.com. That's Nutrafol.com. These statements have not been approved by the FDA. This product is not intended to diagnose, treat, cure, or prevent any disease paid for by Nutraceutical Wellness, Inc.
What's up, Open Floor Globe? I'm your host, Michael the Pod Pina, and I'm joined on the other line by my good friend, Sports Illustrated senior writer Chris Herring. Chris, the regular season is almost over. How are you doing, man? Are you ready for the playoffs?
Yes.
You sound it.
Part of me just kind of feels like I make a point to not watch much college. I think you, as you know, as people that do this job know, it's kind of so much to already make the time to watch pro as much as we do. So it's very difficult for me to kind of slot in college, but I felt like the tournament was interesting this year. I'm kind of not totally looking forward to just like watching games all day when we have like the four games. It's basically like Christmas every day for weeks on end with like Love also it. Writing responsibility. It's just like, yo, so I'm kind of not looking forward to diving into all that, but I'm looking forward to good basketball. What I'm also not looking forward to is submitting my vote for these ballots. Like, they're just brutal. And I don't know, just brutal. So there's a lot of things I'm not looking forward to right now, to be honest.
AKA, you are very much looking forward to our conversation on today's show.
Nope.
We will be opening up the mailbag, and we will be giving our official All-NBA and MVP picks. In general, we'll be having a ton of fun. So first, a quick reminder to our wonderful listeners to please keep your emails coming. The play-in is next week. I want to hear emails about it. Come on, people. Openfloormail@gmail.com. That's openfloormail@gmail.com. All right. So, Chris, I want to start with a conversation about a team that might have the most vocal or aggressive fan base in terms of people who email openfloormail@gmail.com, and that is the Toronto Raptors.
Yeah.
2019 world champs. Scottie Barnes, Pascal Siakam, Fred VanVleet, Nick Nurse, Masai Ujiri. Just let's go. They're just so much fun. Last night, the Raptors humbled the Philadelphia 76ers without Fred VanVleet in a game that may very well lead to these two teams squaring off in the first round. I've previously said that Toronto was a very bad matchup for the Philadelphia 76ers. Last night's game, watching it, really reinforced that thought, even though Matisse Thybulle did not play because he is not fully vaccinated. So that's another just a wrench to throw in this whole conversation that we don't really need to address too deeply. But Chris, I know you didn't get a chance to catch last night's particular game, but Toronto's been hot of late, I would say. How good do you think this team actually is heading into the playoffs?
I think they're very good. And, it's weird. I didn't get a chance to watch the game, but I got a chance to ask Nick Nurse some questions yesterday before the game. I'm probably going to do something on the Raptors relatively soon as far as the story is concerned. I just think, you remember a story, one of the stories that stands out most to me of like all the ones I can remember from the last 5-10 years is one that Tom Haberstroh wrote about the Memphis Grizzlies. This was the grit and grind Grizzlies and the fact that they were basically like the best team in the clutch for like 4 years in a row. I really liked the story, and I really liked kind of the supposition it made at the end, or, you know, even towards the top, was just the idea that the Grizzlies play so slow relative to everyone else in the league that when games slow down, the Grizzlies are already used to it. So it's not really the game changing for them. It's just like a continuation of what they already do. There's a lot of that in these Raptors from a playoff standpoint, just from, I used this phrase when I tweeted about the Raptors a couple games I was watching of theirs last week. They're beautifully weird. They're just such an odd team. There's limbs everywhere. I guess I shouldn't say that. There are arms everywhere. It made it sound like we were, you know, we're talking about like a war or something. Anyway, it's arms everywhere. It's just a long team, which, I mean, obviously that's not news to anyone, but like particularly, I think you see it even more. At least yesterday they had Malachi Flynn playing, but most nights where they don't have Van Vliet, like they're okay. So they're not using a point guard at all. Instead, they're just rolling out there with a bunch of dudes that are 6'9", like basically all of them. In games where they don't have Malachi Flynn or Fred VanVleet, everybody in their lineup is 6'5 or taller. And then beyond that, I think after Gary Trent, everyone is like 6'8 or taller. So it's just a team, everybody has length. Everybody's got a 7-foot wingspan. It's impossible to like get around them easily. It's hard to shoot over them. And because they're forced into it between Scottie Barnes and Siakam and other guys, everybody, you know, that you've got guys that are handling the ball that are all like LeBron sized as well, which just create like they can see over everybody. Siakam's had a couple triple doubles in the last few weeks, which, you know, before last week he'd had one in his career. He's had two in the last week. So there's just a lot that I would not look forward to about them playing against them. Guys are starting to seemingly be more comfortable. Achiuwa is hitting threes and has the confidence to hit them. Defensively, they're a nightmare. Nick Nurse, part of what I was saying before about the Memphis example, the idea that they seem prepared for the playoffs are responding to kind of like the situation you're in as far as what the other team is doing, as far as an injury happening, as far as foul trouble. This team has kind of had to experiment all year just because injuries, because Nick Nurse enjoys coaching a weird team that Masai Ujiri has put together, because Nick Nurse is going to kind of throw the kitchen sink at you from a zone standpoint in the middle of a game, in the middle of a quarter. This team is prepared. And I think they've got too many things they're good at. They can get hot from three. I would not look forward to playing them at all if I was anyone, let alone Philly, which has its own stuff to work out seemingly.
Precious Achiuwa last night grabbed a defensive rebound, dribbled up the floor, and jacked just up a three.
I did see that part. Mm-hmm.
It's like, what is going on?
And it doesn't look like, I mean, it stands out enough, but it's like they've been doing stuff like that. And like that was maybe an extreme for him, but he's shown an ability to hit these shots. And it like he, this time last year, earlier this year, this is not stuff we were looking for from him. It's just a team that I feel like they're growing still. And it was really easy to kind of think that this team was going to make a jump this year without even knowing that Scottie Barnes was going to be as good as he's been. And I think he deserves every bit of the rookie of the year conversation. Like, he's making me rethink my idea that I've been kind of locked into Evan Mobley.
Wait, Chris, on that note, can you see my t-shirt? Did you get one of these?
You know what? Oh, that's funny. They sent me a buttload of stuff this past week. I haven't opened any of it.
For our listeners, I'm wearing a Scottie Barnes Rookie of the Year t-shirt that the Toronto Raptors mailed me to coerce my vote, to buy
they
my
also
vote.
Sent me, they also sent me Gary Trent Jr. propaganda, same. Which I haven't opened any of it. It's not just the Raptors. In fairness, I haven't opened the stuff that the Utah Jazz sent me either. I think I have other, I've got emails. Someone called me complimenting my book out of the blue the other day, and I was like, oh, so you need my vote for something. Thanks. Like, PR person I haven't heard from in 6 years.
So good.
It's a little, I was in Whole Foods the other day. Somebody called me about the Warriors. I'm just like, good Lord, man. So, no, I have not opened it. It's, it's silly. It's that silly time of year. But anyway, Scottie Barnes deserves to be in that conversation. Like, I just think there's three guys that clearly are deserving, I think, at this point. And you have a fourth and fifth guy, quite frankly, that statistically are really good, that Franz Wagner in a normal ass year could be rookie of the year without, like, numbers wise. He has a stronger case than like anybody that's played. in recent years.
If he was on the Warriors, he would be in this conversation. People would be vociferous about his case.
If he was on the Magic in most years with this stat line that he's put up, and not just the stat line, he looks it. Like, he's good.
And is playing every game. Yeah.
Yeah. So it's just a tough year, man. Like, I don't know. I don't know. I'm being a chicken about a lot of my votes so far, but
that team is
legit, and I would want nothing to do with having to play them, if only for Nick Nurse and the wrenches he's going to throw on what he does and what he tries. But I think out of necessity, they've had to try a lot of crazy stuff, and a lot of it has stuck to the wall. I'll put it that way.
Our producer Shelby just wrote us a note saying that he wants the Gary Trent Jr. stuff. I apologize, but the Gary Trent Jr. t-shirt that was mailed out, I've already worn it once. It's actually incredible. I'm going to be wearing it in public like all summer long. No offense to Gary Trent Jr. I wish it was another player on it. It was a little cooler. Sorry, Gary Trent Jr.
Wow.
But first of all, no, I'm sorry. But it's like, what is he really in the most improved player? Like, is he top 10 for you in that? We're doing like a little sidebar here, but like,
I think he's probably like a long list candidate. I looked at it and I think his case is just kind of whatever. There have been games where I watch him and I think that where
he's
he has games where he hits 7, 8, 9 threes, but
absolutely. I just think
I'm not sure that.
Yeah.
There's a lot of guys that could be on that list ahead of him, in my opinion, but I think he's had a good season.
So anyway, with that win last night, the Raptors, I mean, they were already basically locked into the fifth seed, and beating the Sixers, it looks like the Sixers have something like 60% chance to finish fourth. And you look at kind of how things are shaping up, and there's still a couple games to be played this weekend, and nothing is cemented yet. But honestly, if we know Miami's number one, if Toronto plays the Sixers in the first round, I'm picking Toronto in that series. And I'm not, based on just how James Harden has looked, I'm just not like, I think it's DEFCON 1, DEFCON 5. I don't even know which DEFCON is the bad DEFCON, but it's not looking good for the Philadelphia 76ers right now. And I'm picking Toronto in that series. And then, like, Toronto also matches up fine with the Miami Heat, assuming the Miami Heat beat whoever they play, who is the eighth seed. And all of a sudden, it's like, it's not crazy for the Toronto Raptors, this team that was basically an afterthought for the entirety of the regular season. It is not an afterthought, or is not impossible for them to make a conference finals run. And then once you get to the conference finals, who knows? And Pascal Siakam is, I don't want to step on the All-NBA conversation too much, but he has been ridiculous, as you were saying. Fred VanVleet is an all-star, and is the if they make the conference finals, what degree of surprised, astonished? What's your reaction going to be to that?
I'm not. No, I'm dead serious, and like this is not a recent thing. They've been playing well for a while now. Again, everything they have done on some level has been somewhat out of necessity, because up until a week and a half ago, they weren't like safely in the playoffs. They were a play-in team. So they've had to kind of charge things up, but they've had talent all along. I think it's kind of fitting into roles and, again, trying different things. Sometimes it's going to backfire. They've got a lot of young guys on that roster. They've had a lot of injuries. Maybe their best defender on their whole team has missed a huge chunk of the season. And so there's that. They've been playing most of the season with one legit point guard, maybe, I guess, one and a half with the time that Flynn has missed. Very good point guard, but still, like, it's difficult. Most teams can't operate with one point guard on their roster. And, you know, even if that person is an all-star, it's just a team. Like I said, the best way I could say it is I would want nothing to do with them if I am the Heat, if I am certainly the Sixers, which every day it kind of seems like there's, you know, figuring out the James Harden situation and that fit, to the point now where I've seen people on Twitter that I actually respect say, like, man, do you, is it a for sure certain thing that, like, when Harden's deal is up, that you're like, what are you giving him contract wise? Obviously, you have to give him the max or else he's going to leave. But, like, do you want to do that? What sort of contract do you want to lay out for this man, given what you've seen? Which, remember, 2-3 games in, we were ready to throw parades for the Sixers. Our editors were asking for stories, like, we want to write stories on the reaction for the Sixers and how they look with Harden and how great they look. I'm like, no, I don't want that responsibility, mostly because I don't want to look like a clown, you know, 2-3 weeks later. And at least I'm not wearing clown shoes. But but I mean, it's like you said, I don't know which DEFCON it is either, man. But it's if they lose in the first round to a lower seeded team that legitimately, like, flat out beats them. Yeah, there's going to be some conversation. You know that Charles Barkley meme, not meme, but just we are going to have a we are going to start a dialogue or whatever it says. Dialogues are going to be had in Philly if this happens, about Morey as well. I mean, like, because you know, the idea that people were the heist that he pulled off to get James Harden. At a certain point, we're going to need to have a conversation about Harden turning it on and off, and the idea of, like, okay, there's something to be said for
what is on right now. Like
there's a certain, like, part of what I think is so interesting. We have the all NBA conversation is just, you know, and you and I always have this conversation about, like, why I always say I would take Giannis as my number one guy in the league right now. It's just consistency as far as the injury stuff. I mean, obviously you could put Jokic in that conversation too, given that he hasn't missed time, but I just think the consistency of having somebody that's going to play night in, night out, play well, and effort and everything else. And it's a tough scene right now, given what does on look like for Harden in a year where Embiid has been healthy. Like, it's tough. It's a tough scene, and I don't know what to expect, but the trajectory of where the Raptors are at versus the Sixers, if they have to play each other in the first round, good luck. If you're Philly, good luck.
I don't want to bury the Sixers long term, because I do think they still have Embiid. If they get spacers, better shooting, another ball handler, a third star beside Harden and Embiid, we'll see what happens. But this team, no, sorry. Like, 0% chance of winning the championship. Harden was complaining about spacing after the Raptors game, or mentioned spacing after the Raptors game, and Danny Green hit like 6 threes. Like, what are we talking
about? I didn't even know here? That. I haven't even, like I said, I haven't seen, I didn't even know. So Danny Green had a good game. Danny Green was all Doc was talking about in pregame, by the way, about just how valuable a guy he is, which he is. But yeah, I don't know. Like, there's parts of me that, like, if you could have just added James Harden to the roster without giving anything up, which life doesn't work that way. You know, if you could have kept Curry, and Drummond has been so important, you know, just in Brooklyn, quite frankly. I don't know. I just think you shouldn't have to ask the question of whether something was lost when you add someone like James Harden. And the fact that we're having that conversation is not good. But we'll see what happens. Crazier things have happened.
Okay, I want to quickly shift gears and throw this question at you. An email from a listener named Drew that is, I don't think we're going to spend too much time answering it, but Drew, shout out to you for writing it, and it's hilarious. Drew writes, Michael, Rohan, and Chris, continued great work. With all NBA teams on everyone's mind, I have a thought experiment. What would happen if your 2021-22 All-NBA first team played the Oklahoma City Thunder's current starting five, but you had to replace one of the All-NBA first teamers with yourself? Who wins? Can't wait to hear your answers. Drew, thank you so much. I'm going to throw it to you, Chris. Why don't you give us your answer first, and then I'll tackle it real quick.
If you could give me even 5 seconds, this is like, this question is so funny just because it's like, I don't, without being mean, because it's not a criticism. It very much reminds me of like a question. I went to college. I went to a school where a lot of people enjoyed things that come from the earth. This strikes me as one of those questions where maybe, I don't know. Anyway, it's a fantastic question. Somebody asked me a question when my book was coming out. What did they ask specifically? Anthony Mason and Charles Oakley versus 100 Reggie Miller-sized Reggie Millers. Who wins the fight? And it's very much like one of those sorts of questions, because I was just like, what? I don't even know where this question came from, but it's hilarious. What I would say is I think the team, first of all, I've watched some brutal Oklahoma City games. And for all we know, Oklahoma City would probably still sit out Shai Gilgeous-Alexander. So I'm going to go with the all-NBA team with me on it, because I could at least just hide in the dunker spot or, you know, sit on the bench and give them more spacing. And they'd probably just do better 4-on-5.
They would win 4-on-5.
Oklahoma City would tank the game anyway, and we'd be fine. So, I mean, I wrote a small piece in my notebook last week about how funny it was that Oklahoma City and Detroit, like this back and forth they're having for like the third worst record so that they can be included in the top odds for the lottery, and how silly it's gotten, where the Pistons are like sitting guys out in the fourth quarter, the entire fourth quarter, when they're in like a 4 or 5 point game, just because they're playing guys that joined the team hours before the game, just to try to, you know, they're trying their best to not win too much as they're on a hot streak at the end of the season. But I think Oklahoma City, I remember they, within one day, they like ruled 3 or 4 guys out for the season all on the same day with injuries, which I'm sure they're legitimately injured. I think they're legitimately injured. Let me not be too certain about it. But like the fact that they ruled all of them out at the same time, I was like, oh, this is interesting. And I don't know. So anyway, I'm going to take the all NBA team and not think too much about it. I think legitimately 4-on-5, they probably can win against Oklahoma City if they're not playing certain guys for sure.
I am also picking myself and for first team all NBA players. And honestly, I'm just like, why doesn't this made me think about why Oklahoma City doesn't just sign like the starting five for the Harlem Globetrotters for the last week of the season, just go so we could like see a show when they play. Like at least it would be super entertaining and just. Oh man!
Just asked why don't they sign the Harlem Globetrotters?
we're an entertainment industry, you know. Like the players that they signed, I do not want to belittle them any further than I already have, but I don't know what their long-term future is in the NBA on an NBA roster. They're playing minutes, big minutes, huge minutes to lose. So I like, it's a sham.
They did sign my boy Simpson from Michigan though, who is like the best hook shot shooter since Kareem.
He made me think of the Harlem, because he is a Harlem Globetrotter type of player. He's like 6 feet tall, 5'6"
or whatever he is. Yes, he is. I mean, I'm sitting here. Let me not do that because he's probably taller than I am. But still, I mean, it's wild. It's wild stuff, man. It is always entertaining to see the Thunder at the end of a season when they realize they don't want to win anymore. Essentially, Shai Gilgeous. I mean, look at how they were playing. I think I've seen more on the pod. Look at how they were playing last year before they shut him down. They were essentially winning every other game with him in the lineup. They were like a 500 team with him in the lineup for that time right before he sat out for I don't know how many games that was over, maybe 12, 13. But like their roster, for how much they try to tear stuff down, their roster is still too good generally to be as bad as they want to be. And that's the reality of kind of where they're at. The Pistons have really found a player in Sadiq Bey. Not found. I mean, they drafted him, obviously. But you got guys going for 50. Those are guys you have to sit out. You maybe don't have to, but they're sitting out in close games just because they – and then it was really funny when they had to play each other like a week ago, the Pistons and the Thunder, just because, again, I don't know that anybody truly wants to win, but the players do. They've got a job to do, and it's hard to tear it all the way down, I guess, for those two teams, or at least for right now.
Yeah. Okay. Well, this was a very fun question. Thank you, Drew. All right. So this is the main course of today's show, Chris. The season is basically over. There's really, I know this, everything's very close. There's a lot of candidates for all NBA and for MVP, at least for the last two slots. But I feel like enough basketball has been played for you two to cement your decisions, to write them in ink. So we're going to go through all NBA first. Do you want to start third team or do you want to start first team? I'll leave it up to you.
Let's do third team first.
Okay.
Well, no, let's do first team. Okay. Let's do first team because I'm going to just get my stuff out of the way right now because you're going to hate me. Our listeners are going to hate me, but I'm legitimately going to take this weekend to finish the last of it because I'll just be real with it. I know who my top two candidates for the award are for MVP. I have no clue still like who I would pick between Jokic and Embiid. Like I maybe leaning a little bit, but I don't know. And so
this disappoints me, honestly.
I know it does. You gave me homework to do, but like I legitimately haven't figured it out. It's frustrating me to not know it. Maybe it's just because I've actually got a vote this year, so I'm taking it more seriously. But
do you want to? Okay, can we just start with MVP then? Because we're already okay. So.
Because I've ruined it. I'm sorry.
No, you didn't ruin anything. But
I've ruined it all, Michael. I'm sorry.
When I hear Embiid and Jokic, like I could go either way. Can you make the case to me for Embiid? Why you feel that way?
Completely. Because I think it comes down to a couple things for me, and I did not expect to feel this way because I think generally speaking, lately I've leaned Jokic, and I know you certainly have your opinion on that. I think what's starting to bother me a little bit about it is that for so much of what we're talking about, the statistics that we're talking about defensively for Jokic, like I can't look at, for me, the eye test doesn't make enough sense to why Jokic has been such a dominant defender for the last few years, but he has. And there have been times where if Rudy misses games, if you look at the Raptor defensive stuff, 538, where I used to work. So obviously I understand some stuff about these numbers. He would outpace someone like Gobert defensively. And so when I look at a lot of the advanced numbers that are picking up something, and I'm willing to acknowledge that there's something there that I'm not seeing, that a lot of us are not seeing. I'm well aware at this point, I test analytics, whatever, that Jokic is not a bad defender. I'm willing to acknowledge that he's an above average defender. What I'm not understanding and what I'm not understanding about what the numbers are capturing is like what makes him a great defender, particularly for someone that drops quite a bit, particularly for someone that like isn't pinning people's shots to the backboard. I understand he has a lot of steals. I understand how he's active. I understand that, you know, I was podcasting with Zach Lowe earlier in the week that he kind of stunted people a lot or kind of essentially psychs them out in terms of making them think that he'll jump at their shots or lunge at their shots when he doesn't.
Genius cat and mouse, big role man defender. Like that's what he is. But
yeah.
Okay, before you go any further, I don't mean to cut you off, but I asked you to make the case for Embiid over Jokic. Are you getting to that?
Oh, no. I'm sorry. I thought that you were asked. So for me, that's a big part of it, though, is that I think Embiid is legitimately like, I think that Jokic has an advantage on Embiid offensively as far as some of the numbers are concerned, even though Embiid leads the league in scoring. Defensively, I think Embiid is better defensively, and like I'm not sure how or why the advanced numbers are decidedly showing Jokic. But I also feel like because of that, when you factor in the idea that Jokic has an advantage on Embiid offensively with a lot of the advanced numbers, which I do understand, if that's what's creating the gap here, the sizable gap here, and I'm not understanding that part of it, I'm not just kind of willing to say I'm voting for him. I do readily understand that Jokic that he's played without the compliments of like his two best players. For me, Embiid, like we just sat and talked about part of why I feel the way I do about Embiid. Embiid's numbers have gotten better in the second half as well, just like Jokic's have. I'm looking at Embiid play with a guy that as good a player as Harden is, like, I'm not sure he compliments him super well. We just talked about how we're not sure that this makes the team even capable of getting out of the damn first round. And it's also someone that has the ball in his hands a lot, but I'm not sure that they've really built this team in a way that really helps Embiid. I'm willing to acknowledge that there's a slight difference between the lack of clarity with whatever the hell was happening with Simmons and the clarity of knowing that my guys are out, I have to do this, which does not make it easier for Jokic. But I will admit, this is a lot of what he was doing last year. At its best, he had Michael Porter standing still last year scoring. He mm-hmm. wasn't putting the ball on the floor. He wasn't distributing the ball to people. Jokic was asked to do that. And so he's asked to do more of it, but it's also something that he's kind of been doing. Michael Porter also missed time last year. And obviously Murray missed time last year. So on some level, what that's given the Nuggets a chance to do is at least find guys that complement him better. Not to say that that's easy, but when you look at the on-off stuff, because of how well Boogie has played, they've also found a way to complement him off the bench to get, they've got maybe the strongest bench in the league statistically. So that would be my rationale, is that I think Embiid has played a lot more. I think last year the race and MVP would have been a lot closer, although I still would have taken Jokic, even if they played the same amount of games last year. We would have had a close race last year had Embiid been healthy. Embiid has been healthy this year. And Embiid has been fantastic. And I feel like with both of them tend to, you know, watch their teams not do as well when they're off the court. But with Embiid, I watch them play the, you know, whoever it is, it'll be the Pistons. And they'll go from having a 27-point lead, and then Embiid has to come in and, you know, play fireman and put the fire out. So I feel like I watched that a lot with that team, even with Harden being there. So I expected for the race to kind of be one-sided once Jokic, once Harden was on the Sixers, just because I figured Harden's going to make life so much easier for Embiid, and that was true for 2-3 games. But it just has not been the case for the rest of the season. So I just think it's closer than what people realize, and I'm a little bit thrown off again by something that shows such a decided advantage when the eye test doesn't really suggest that to me on that end of the floor. And I feel like that is where we're looking at the sizable gap that the advanced numbers keep pointing to Jokic in the way that they do. So that's what I would say.
Okay. I think it's close in the sense that Embiid has had a unbelievable season that is deserving of an MVP. He would win MVP almost in any year in the past 10 years with the season that he's had and the storyline and the circumstances and everything. Absolutely. The thing is that Jokic's season is historically great. It's the highest PER in the history of the NBA. It's the third highest true shooting percentage among players in the history of the league who've taken at least 1,200 shots. When you look at the on-offs, and I really love on-offs for most valuable player, because that's the word valuable is in the award's name. And if we want to change the name of the award, we can do that. We can say most impressive player. We can say best bleeping player in the world. We can change it. But right now it's most valuable player. So who's the player who, when he is off the floor, the team collapses? Statistically, when Jokic is on the floor, I have these numbers right in front of me. The Nuggets are a 62-win team, according to Cleaning the Glass, when Jokic plays. When he is off the floor, they are a 17-win team. That 45-game difference is by far the biggest differential among all players in the NBA. Like, no one touches that. Embiid's is plus 29. Antetokounmpo's is plus 25. Again, Jokic is plus 45. You look up and down. I know all the advanced stats point in Jokic's direction. He leads. He became the first player in NBA history last night to grab 1,000 rebounds, score 2,000 points, and dish out 500 assists in a season. First player ever to do that. Oscar Robertson, Kareem Abdul-Jabbar, Will Chamberlain, Kevin Garnett. These players have all come close. LeBron James. No one has ever done that before. And, like, I just... Yeah, I don't know what, where, what, how they, like, if, the Nuggets have won 48 games. The Sixers have won 49 games. Like, the seeding argument, the
I don't care about MVP, the seeding. I don't care
my
about
MVP
the
needs
seeding.
To win X amount of nope. games or be yeah. in X seeding. It's like, okay, no, absolutely not. Sorry. So I just, I look at, I mean, there's just countless ways to look at it, and I always come back to Jokic is the best player in the league and the most valuable to his team. And, like, there is no one on the Nuggets who is as close to as good as Tyrese Maxey. There's no one on the Nuggets who is as close to as good as Seth Curry. Sorry to Aaron Gordon. That might be a... You could make a little bit of an argument there, but I think Seth Curry is better. James Harden, I mean, as poorly as he's played, as disappointing as he's played, like, come on. Like, Will Barton, Jeff Green, Monte Morris, and who am I missing to round out? And Aaron Gordon. That lineup has played... the most minutes out of every five-man unit in the league, I think, this season, or maybe second most. And they're plus 128, which is best in the league, or second best in the league to the Boston Celtics starting five before Rob Williams got hurt. I'm going off the top of my head, I apologize, but I was just looking at these numbers yesterday. So it's just like, it's just wild stuff that he's done. And, we probably spent way too much time going over. We have a lot to get to on the
but
show.
But no, so. Your point is well taken. It's not to say – all I'm saying is that, to me, it bothers me that it's just so obvious. Like, from that standpoint, maybe it's that I'm taking for granted certain things that he can do, because you're right. If the team takes off because of him and solely because of him, you know, maybe those players are trash when he's not there at all. The guys that you just talked about, that lineup you just talked about, that if they can't do anything with him not there, that's one thing. They've been able to hold their own with him off the floor since the All-Star break, which they've made some additions and some tweaks. They're basically neutral with him off the court during the All-Star break. That's what I'm talking about, though, is like where I think the idea of me expecting Harden to have been a huge difference maker for them. And obviously it's James Harden. So even if we're taking like a diminished version of James Harden, your point is very well taken that like it's still James Harden. What I'm saying is that if someone is a bad fit for a team, I don't think you could just look at it and say it's James Harden. Mm-hmm. And given that, like if Embiid has to do more, if Harden is just throwing the ball away, if Harden is not playing any defense, things that take away from what makes your team the things that make your team as good as it could be, I guess. I don't know. I'm still willing to accept it that Jokic might be my MVP. All I'm saying is that there's some stuff that I think that is at least relatively unexplained for me as far as like I'm used to looking at numbers and being able to make sense of them very quickly. It's what I had to do for a living at 538. It's still part of what I have to do. And sure. I haven't heard anybody articulate exactly what they think that is. Not that it's anybody's job to, but it would be nice. And Jokic consistently rates out as one of the very best defenders in the league, period. Better than someone like Embiid, even though it does not look that way to me. And you know, so whatever that is, it is what it is. But the seeding stuff, I don't give a damn about. I couldn't care less about that because they basically have the same number of wins. And I tend to think that, like, okay, if we're accepting that Embiid has at least teammates that are decent in some cases, relative to what Jokic has, maybe I would expect Embiid to have a couple more wins based on some of that. But I'm just saying that I think some of the craziness with that team, I do factor that in. Like, I at least think that Denver is competent most of the time in a way that maybe the Sixers have not been with some of the ways that they've handled things and the craziness with Ben Simmons. So I don't know. I like I said, I'm legitimately up in the air. Like I don't want it to sound like I'm ironclad. I'm just like, to me, I'm always a little weirded out when it's so obvious. But keep in mind, last year I wrote a piece for us in what month was it? March?
You were ahead of the curve. March,
where I said Jokic is the MVP, even if everybody else is healthy. And they weren't. But to me, so like I'm willing to call it when it's really, really obvious to me. Mm-hmm. It's been weird to me, though, that it's just been so obvious to everyone else. But Jokic fulfills what I would think most people see as an MVP when you're leading your team and everything. So I get it. There's part of me that maybe when you come into a season and you know that's exactly what's being asked of you, maybe it's easier to do that than when it's like you've got something looming over your head and then you get someone that's supposed to come in and help and they actually don't do it. Which maybe that's a knock on Harden more than it is on the Sixers, but like Harden has not been good to the point where he lifts them at all with what we're looking at. And I don't know how much that should matter, but it's part of what I'm thinking about.
Yeah. All right. Well, okay. We got to kind of, I don't want to say zoom through this, but we're not going to spend as much time arguing or having a conversation over 1 and 2 and Jokic and Embiid with everything else. So I'm just going to read you my entire ballot. And
sure.
So I have Jokic 1. I'm submitting this over the weekend. I have not submitted it yet, but this will be what I submit. I have Jokic 1. I have Giannis 2. I have Embiid 3. I have Jason Tatum 4. And I have Steph Curry 5. That's going to be my MVP ballot.
Steph at 5. That's interesting. Okay.
Steph at 5. I feel like the tier there in the 4-5, you can have Luka. That's great. We're splitting hairs. You could have Luka. You could have Book. Steph, Tatum. Like, who is there? Anyone else I'm missing who's kind of in that 4-5 range tier that
the could only conceivably person that I mean, as of a few weeks ago, that I'd been considering was somebody like Morant. But I feel like there's not much argument there. We just had a conversation
over
most valuable. When your team wins 20 games without you out of 23 or whatever it's been. I mean, he's been
missed
fantastic
so much time
this year, but yeah, he's missed a lot of time and his team has been better, you know, record-wise without him than they were with him. So, no, I don't think there's a case there. So I really feel like there's a case where maybe 6 or 7 people could have your vote, but that's about that in my mind, what I would think.
Chris, it's time. What's your ballot?
So I have those two guys at 1 and 2 that we obviously talked about. I still have not locked that in. Obviously, I've not submitted my ballot yet. I had Giannis 3, Luka at 4, and Tatum at 5 for mine. So I'm pretty much in lockstep with what you said as far as those guys in consideration. I feel like most people's ballots will probably look like that as far as some, you know, maybe someone's in one spot or the other, but I kind of feel like those five, maybe Booker will be most people's top 5 or top 6. I'm interested to see how many people have Steph in their top 5. We'll see.
Yeah. You know, that was, I just kind of clung to him as like Luka. Luka and Steph was very, 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 very close for me. The Steph thing is just, it always just comes back to value and look, like nothing against Luka, but, and I know this is like circumstantial and weird and it has to do with how rosters are structured and there's a lot of noise involved, but like the Mavericks are like fine when Luka isn't on the floor. Like I understand his usage and all the things he does on offense when he's there, but they're also really tricky to defend and they defend really well when he's off the floor. So it's, yeah. But I again, if you have him 4, that's great. People will probably, there might be some voters who have him even higher. I can't wait to see.
He had a slow start to the season. Him and Tatum both. I mean, that's kind of what's been weird about this year is that there were very few guys that beginning. Yeah. There were very few guys that beginning to end were just great. Steph is another good example of that. So
Steph,
I just,
in the straw poll, the first straw poll, he was like the unanimous MVP winner.
Right.
In December.
I mean, this is easily, since I've covered the league the most, that the conversation has shifted where it really went, it's really gone through two or three different people, but completely different. You know, Steph was dominating the poll. Then Embiid was dominating the poll. Now Jokic is dominating that poll. So it's just, I can't ever remember three different people kind of wearing the hat during the same season. Or if they were, it was like relatively close. And all of these vote totals have been way different. My opinion has shifted on those people to some degree as well. But I don't know. It's been a weird year from that standpoint. So I don't know. I don't even know how my own effing ballot is going to shake out. But it's been a strange year. Whoever wins will be super, super deserving, because it's just it's not an easy year to make a lot of these calls. I would not even just say MVP for me, but just the All-NBA. I actually think All-NBA might be easier than normal, just because you've had so many guys that have missed time. You don't have to consider someone like Dame,
Kawhi. You
know, Kawhi, Paul George. Yeah. So it actually feels easier to me than it would normally be, but it's still difficult, which tells you about just the caliber of the players, obviously, and how much certain guys are propping up their teams.
Okay, so speaking of All-NBA, let's get back to that. Let's do first team first.
Okay.
My first team is, my two guards are Steph and Luka. Two forwards are Giannis and Tatum. My center is Jokic. So my first thing I just want to say is that, you know, the big thing here is that, you know, trying to get all the best players on first team, regardless of position, I hope in the future that is how it is done. And I hope that we can ignore positions and just do this thing and just grade out the top 15 guys and rank them like that. That's not how it is right now. So to have the option of voting for players who do not play a certain position and putting them at that position makes absolutely no sense to me. Joel Embiid is a center. Nikola Jokic is a center. If you feel one is better than the other, one has to go in first team, one has to go in second team. That's just how I feel about that. Okay, what is your first team, Chris?
No, I agree with that. And once I situate what the hell I'm thinking in my head, we'll iron out one versus the other. I'm not going to put them on the same team, because I also don't like what it does down ballot to do that. So I will pick one. I don't like that it's designed that way. I feel like the league is trying to provide wiggle room to not have those two guys on, you know, one of them on the second team when one will probably finish as the second in the MVP voting, which I get it. It's a kind of a rare problem, although they would have run into the problem last year too, had Embiid played more. So my team is similar to yours. Like I said, I'll have one of those two guys at center, Giannis at one of the forward spots, Tatum at the other, Luka at one of the guard spots. Then I picked Booker instead of Steph. So we had the same team aside from that.
Okay. I have nothing to quibble with. Let's move on to second team. My two guards are Ja Morant and Trae Young. My two forwards are DeMar DeRozan and Kevin Durant. My center is Joel Embiid. Do you have any questions about my team, Chris? Any thoughts? Any reactions?
I'm a little bit surprised that you didn't have Bron on the second team, but I'm not going to quibble. I mean, it's a competitive year. That would probably be my one question. But no, I mean, other than that, no.
So the one I was expecting to hear back from was Trey on the second team.
No, nope. You're not going to hear that from
that?
Me.
Okay, I mean, that's because you're a smart guy.
He's not on my second team, but I'm also not going to like look at you like you're crazy. I mean, the dude's numbers, look at his numbers and then look at Steph's numbers this year.
Like, yeah, Trey's like their true shooting's identical.
The knock on Trey for years has been like, he looks to be more of like, I mean, first of all, dude launches up shots from the other free throw line, mm-hmm. you know, as far as where he's shooting from. So maybe it's not even fair to have an expectation for him that he's going to make like a league average number of threes percentage wise. Dude was at 38 something percent this year. On his volume, on think about where he shoots from on a team that ain't that much offense coming from that team if it's not him creating it. You know, basically right at the top of the league in assists again. I think, you know, right at the top of the league in scoring, basically, which is what he's done for a few years now. But again, doing it on a new level of efficiency. So the defense concerns are always there. They still are for him. But you're not going to hear a huge, huge knock out of me for putting him second team. Like I said, my question would have been more about like LeBron and why he wasn't second team, especially if somebody like KD was with the games missed. But no, I'm good with it.
I mean, honestly, I'm a huge Trey person. I watch a lot of Hawks, and I don't think anybody has the type of offensive responsibility he does in the entire league, just in terms of how he makes plays for his teammates. And I think he's first in total assists and like second in total points, something like that. One of the most efficient, if not the most efficient pick and roll operator, despite his volume being first in terms of pick and rolls initiated. Just he creates problems that no one can solve. The floater, the mid-range pull-up, the 35-foot pull-up, logo threes. Offensively, he's almost perfect. And defensively, it's the exact opposite. I acknowledge that 100%.
Yeah, yeah. But
when you're that special offensively and you make the game so much easier for your teammates, I just think that is really – that's worth something, and that's all NBA caliber stuff. And
I better make was a like, team. He better make a team.
That's what I was thinking. I was like –
Hawks fans tweet me and they're like, is he going to be on your team? I'm like, yeah. Like, I mean, but he deserves to be. And I get like record wise and everything. This would be the equivalent, essentially. This is going a little bit far because LeBron is 6'8 and defends occasionally or defends when he wants to. It would be the equivalent of basically saying, like, is LeBron going to make your all NBA team? Just based on like the production, the offensive production, except Trey's producing more from an assist standpoint. And that he's a better shooter than LeBron is. So it's kind of wild to me, but I know we have to consider records in this stuff, or maybe we don't. Maybe it should just be the best 15 guys. They could lose every game, and you're not concerned about whether they should be all NBA. Trey's deserving, and hopefully he makes the team to show that, because he definitely deserves to make the team.
So, okay, tell me your second team.
Morant, Steph, LeBron, KD, and then again, one of Embiid or Jokic once I make a decision on that. But to me, you know, it's just not having had Steph on my first team. I think he clearly deserves to be either first team or second team. I would probably put him on my second team. Same with Morant, you know, a guy that I think had an MVP caliber season just statistically. I think his team took off in part because of just how much of a jump he made. But again, his team also took off when he sat out. He also missed a lot of time, even relative to like Steph and Chris Paul. You know, I think he missed the most time of any of the guards that really was under consideration for first or second team. So, you know, that's why he's on second team. LeBron still could have a case for, you know, the scoring crown in a year where his team was trash, but he was pretty incredible to watch him. Particularly in the second half, to just go for 30, 35 plus like every night in the second half of the season. So I think he deserves a spot. And then KD, it should be kind of a self-explanatory. You know, I think, you know, you and a lot of other folks out there feel he's the best player in the world when he's healthy and when he can play. And
he'd be first team if he didn't have the knee injury. And
right.
For me,
just like insane and watching what he had to play with this year and play through and just kind of the silliness, although he seemingly excused a lot of it just because he's boys with Kyrie, whatever. He's just as good as they come. So, you know, second team felt appropriate for him too.
So LeBron DeRozan is one of those extremely close calls. DeRozan in the clutch has just been uncanny all season long. I think statistically, like if we're just looking at like, okay, LeBron, if we're just, okay, if we're taking out the age and how impressive that has been when you factor in being a 37-year-old and playing all those minutes as LeBron has, it's like DeRozan isn't super young and like the minutes disparity is kind of massive and statistically they're very close. So I just felt like I wanted to like reward DeRozan for contributing to a winner in that sense, as opposed to LeBron, who the Lakers, like he has a negative net rating this season. That's like, that's wild for LeBron James. I don't care who's around him. He's played tremendous basketball. That kind of, when we're trying to split hairs here, that kind of nudges it a little bit for me. But I have a thing, the thing about LeBron that's just been so amazing is I think he's like second among all players in field goal percentage in the restricted area among all everyone who's taken at least 100 shots or something like that. Like 75% in the restricted area. Like just wild stuff from LeBron. And he's getting there a lot. So like if you have him second team, that's fine. And I wonder how many will have him on the first team, frankly. There will be people who have him on the first team.
I mean, he would have, let's be all the way real here. He would have gotten MVP votes. He may still get a couple. I think it would be a little weird considering that they're not even going to make the play-in. And generally speaking, that's been an award that people take some of their cues from standings. So I maybe people will kind of be shamed into not voting for him for that reason. But if you take their record and you make it, I mean, well, how bad are they? If you make their record 8 games better, which that's a lot of games, it's 10% of the season, I guarantee you he would at least get some back-end MVP votes because like he's basically never scored this much before. I think he had one season in Cleveland where he scored this much per game. He still assists, you know, he's still LeBron. And like you said, I mean, there's some aspects of his game that I won't say as good as they've ever been, but like they're not that far off. The difference is the longevity and not the longevity, but just the availability, which has hurt him. I think him having to play because of the situation they've been in has hurt him because he's, you know, he's had to play as much and quite frankly may end up losing the scoring crown in part because of it, because he has had to sit out these last couple games, which will technically make him ineligible to, you know, to be on the league leader list. I think, what do you have to play 58? And I think he's played 56 or something like that.
I don't think he's going to qualify.
I think he's going to be a game or two short, which I don't know. Like, Embiid might have passed him for how many points per game he's scoring anyway at this point. But I think Bron is right at 30 or slightly above 30. So it's just, I mean, look, I'm not going to ever get on someone for kind of rewarding winning. My response to the DeRozan thing would be like defensively, I don't know what he's adding. I think and I think the Bulls suffered for that and stopped winning, quite frankly, once the defense around him was thwarted, you know, with Caruso and Lonzo Ball. But he's bailed him out so many times. He had the back-to-back game winners. He's been, you know, on a team with another all-star, he's been the best offensive player they have by far. I think even more than LaVine. LaVine has been more spotty than him. LaVine has not been as healthy as he has in a year where a lot of people missed time because of COVID. DeRozan is going to play as close to a full season as really anybody on this list. He might end up having played more games than anybody on this list of guys that we've talked about so far, where he's going to end up with 77 games played or something, which I don't know if anybody on the first, second, or third team will do that. So you're not going to hear complaint from me about that. I was just curious about why LeBron wasn't there. So that makes sense.
Best mid-range shooter in the league. Sorry, Chris Paul, Kevin Durant. Just in terms of volume, DeRozan's been that this year. And then it matters to me, like, when we're talking All-NBA, total stats matter. He's got the most points in the league. Like, I just think that you like, the games are there. You're supposed to play the games. And so in this era of load management, et cetera, if you're 32, 33 years old and you've scored more baskets than anybody else, in the world, then shout out to you. Like I'm applauding you, and you're doing it efficiently. So
okay. That's, very good that's point. Me.
So okay, third team. My two guards. Third team was hardest for me to do. My two guards are Devin Booker and Chris Paul. Two forwards are LeBron and Pascal Siakam. And my center is Kat. I will say real quick that I went back and forth for a long, 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 long time between Chris Paul and Donovan Mitchell. And
I didn't.
Ultimately, it was like, if the season ended 2 weeks ago, I might have had Mitchell.
Yep.
But I'm just like, it's such a stupid thing to say, but like the vibes nope. are just
no, terrible. It's not because I'm in the exact same boat you are, man. Like I wrote my newsletter and led that with the Jazz about just, I mean, thank goodness for them that they won the other night in that game over Memphis. Obviously, it was one of the first few games that Memphis has lost without Morant. So they almost beat the Jazz in Utah in overtime. But no, the vibes are bad. And I think you're right. Like Rudy Gobert said it with Malika Andrews on ESPN yesterday. And I'm glad he said it. And I think there's probably a little bit of truth to what he's saying, where he's like, the type of season that the team is having shouldn't fundamentally make a difference in me being defensive player of the year or not. I'm still making the impact. The team might not be as good around me. Like he didn't say it quite that upfront, you know, as far as the way he said it. But he was like, I mean, nothing's changed about my production, which is pretty much true. But the team has not been great around him, certainly defensively and offensively. And I pointed this out in my newsletter. Donovan Mitchell's basically been the worst shooter in the clutch this whole season. So when we talk about where games are won and lost, and you talk about the DeRozan stuff and the reason that we kind of elevate him on he's on my 13, by the way, DeRozan. So, you know, I think you're right that he's probably a closer call to second team than what I even had him at with LeBron. Donovan Mitchell has had a little bit of a rough year in that regard. They've still needed his offense, but maybe it's like a chicken and the egg thing. I don't know if because they need his offense that badly that he suffers because of it, because he has to do so much. Or if it's that for a team that has the best offensive rating in the league, should they be sharing the ball more? Should he be sharing the ball more to get other guys' shots when he's struggling that much? And the fact that I can't definitively answer that question, that their offense just goes to crap at the end of games, in part because he's got a 41.4 clutch shooting percentage, which is only like it's 33rd out of 34 with guys that have taken more than 50 shots in the clutch. I don't know where to place that. Like to me, it's barely off my all NBA team, but it's off my all NBA team. And I don't feel great about it. He's had counting wise, he's had a good season, but it has not been super, super elite to me. And, I think that is where, you know, if the team is on the trajectory that they were when they were kind of duking it out for the second seed in the West with Golden State, it was one thing because then naturally you're going to try to make room for somebody on your all NBA team when the team is playing really well and that they're, you know, third best record in the league. They haven't been that team for a long time. And the vibes, like you said, have been bad. 6 out of 8 that they've lost. It had been 6 out of 7 before this last game. So yeah, he's not on my team either. You want me to read off my team for third team?
I would love for that.
Okay. So I think we actually had in one order or another, just the same 15 guys. I had Chris Paul, Trae Young, DeMar DeRozan, Siakam, and Towns on my third team. I think all of them are super deserving. DeRozan, you know, was in the MVP conversation for a while, which I think was a little bit of an overshoot for people. I think they were kind of looking around. And it was, you remember the weekend that people started having that conversation. It was the weekend that he made those two game winners in a row. The Bulls were unexpectedly in first place for quite a while in the East. So people are looking for someone to crown outside of the usual suspects. You know, but I think he's still definitely deserving of all NBA. to me, you know, one of the best arguments for maybe having Luka, I'm sorry, for having Booker where you have him second or third team is the idea that, and maybe for not having Booker as like an MVP candidate, is the fact that I think him and Paul are both super, super responsible for the ebbs and flows of that offense. And so it's not just one guy. I think you can make that argument pretty easily. So, you know, I had Chris Paul there for that reason, because I feel like he's just as responsible, if not more, for their offense doing what it does in Phoenix and keeping everything afloat. Siakam is the guy that I feel like some people may not have on their team, which we talked about him earlier. He absolutely deserves a spot. He's been great defensively. He's been great offensively, maybe better than ever in recent weeks. And the difference being that he's running the show and being asked to run the show, particularly when Van Vliet's not there. Distributing the ball, forcing teams to commit defensively to him, and then kicking the ball to open shooters and everything. And Towns, like, to me, Towns has been the third best center in the game. And I'm sure Gobert won't like that. We'll see. Gobert may make the all-NBA team, because I'm sure a certain number of people will put Embiid and Jokic on the first team, which I don't like. But if that happens, you'll end up getting four centers. And Gobert will probably make it based on that if it happens. But to me, I think Towns has just been too dominant offensively, and I think he's been fine defensively in a year where Gobert has been dominant defensively and okay offensively.
Yep, I 1,000% agree. The one player I don't think we've mentioned, or I
Jimmy
guess
Butler.
Team, that's exactly what I was going to say. The fact that the number one seed in the Eastern Conference has no one on either of our All-NBA teams.
Rough.
And
I thought about it, though, for a long time. I just couldn't get there. Were you closer to picking Butler or Bam for that?
Butler. But okay. Jimmy and Siakam back and forth. And then you look at it and you're like, okay, Siakam has played, what is it, like 600 more minutes? Something like that? Something wild. And
yeah,
it's like,
Butler's missed a decent amount of time.
That's
Butler's
a lot of
also
minutes.
The one guy that, when I talked about guys that have really struggled in the clutch with their true shooting percentage, I said that Donovan Mitchell was 33rd out of 34. Butler was 34th in terms of like worst clutch shooting percentages. So I kind of thought about that one long and hard. I also think the Heat, one, that this is an area where maybe the late climb to the top of the conference maybe hurt them, where, you know, you've had Phoenix to talk about all year. So everybody kind of knows what their guys are doing and that their guys deserve to be in certain conversations. With Miami, I think they're a team where they get so many contributions from so many guys, whether it's Bam, Hero's going to run away with the sixth man in a way that nobody has in years. Obviously Butler, but because you've got so many guys that are all, and Lowry obviously is like a plus minus savant. When you have all those contributions coming from that many guys, I feel like it's harder to kind of pinpoint one guy and credit him for a lot of it. So I think Butler kind of hurts from that. He's hurt by that as well. Aside from the fact that he's just kind of struggled in certain moments of the game. So I feel really good about the Siakam pick. I thought about it, but didn't think about it that hard, because I just think he's been great. And I think he's been just as good basically defensively as Butler has.
Well, Chris, we did it. How do you feel? Do you feel good? I feel great.
Nope, because I copped out, and I'm still gonna have to think about this more. But I guess on some level, this is what you should want. Maybe not for people to take cop outs, but for people to sit and think long and hard about why they're making the pick, how they're making the pick, if it's the pick they want to make. You know, but you've given me a lot to think about with some of the minute stuff. And just some of the Jokic stuff, because like maybe I'm probably too in my head about it. But I, like, the more I've thought about it, I have had at some point, maybe that's a story that we need to tackle, or one of us needs to write, just like down to a T of like what the numbers are capturing about Jokic and his ability on defense that I'm not, because I see it, but I don't see that, like all of that. And I would love to understand what I'm missing there to some extent.
Well, on that note, Jokic is the MVP. Anyone else who picks otherwise is dumb. All right. So, Chris, thank you so much. This was a lot of fun. Thank you to our listeners. Please keep your emails coming. Openfloormail@gmail.com. That's openfloormail@gmail.com. Everybody, please stay safe. Everyone, please continue to enjoy what is left of the NBA regular season.
How do people feel about getting Big Fitness Energy at Planet Fitness for $15 a month? They feel as thrilled as a kid the first summer they're tall enough to ride the roller coaster. That's right. When you join Planet Fitness right now, you get access to tons of equipment and free fitness training in a clean and spacious club. Don't wait. Join the judgment-free zone today for that all-day energy. Download the free Planet Fitness app and join today for $15 a month.
Hurry. Deal ends September 12th. Join today for $15 a month.
See Home Club for details.